It's Christmas Eve, 1951, New York City. 60-year-old J.C. Hall sits in the corner of Studio 8H in Rockefeller Center. He leans back in his canvas-backed director's chair, his eyebrows raised skeptically. There's a sinking feeling in his stomach. What had started as a seed of doubt a few hours ago is now a crater of uncertainty. Hall and his two brothers founded what is now called Hallmark Cards in 1907. They started selling postcards in a single storefront in Norfolk, Nebraska. Now, it's the preeminent greeting card company in the country. For the last 3 years, the company has been sponsoring radio plays. But tonight, they're making their television debut, presenting the first opera performed live on television. Hall's brothers thought the move to TV was too risky, but Hall likes to innovate. As he watches the chaos unfold around him, though, he's starting to think his brothers were right. A boy around 12 runs by with no shirt. His mother follows, waving clothing.
Chet, get back here! You were supposed to be in costume 6 minutes ago!
Hall checks his watch. They're scheduled to go live on air in under 15 minutes. He turns to the executive sitting next to him.
Are you sure you're going to pull this off? There's not much time left.
The executive smiles tightly.
Absolutely. No reason to worry.
I thought I overheard someone say that no one even got the music until yesterday. That can't possibly be true, can it?
The executive blanches.
Well, you know writers. They always push a deadline. But all our performers are pros. They're ready.
Before Hall can respond, the boy runs by again, and this time, he's not wearing pants. Hall slumps in his seat. He's contemplating marching over and demanding they take Hallmark's name off the production when a short balding man in suspenders walks by waving a clipboard.
Places, everyone, places!
Within seconds, musicians, performers, and crew have all taken their spots. The boy is even fully in costume. The executive looks at Hall and winks.
Told you we always pull it off.
The stage manager holds up his hand, his fingers spread wide.
And we're live in 5, 4, 3.
He stops saying the numbers out loud, just mouths the last 2 seconds. He points, and the on-air sign lights up. The host steps forward, speaking directly into camera one.
Greetings and Merry Christmas. I'm Sarah Churchill. Tonight, we have a special treat, the premiere of Amahl and the Night Visitors, the first opera written for television. And without further ado, NBC proudly presents a Hallmark Television Playhouse production.
The boy mimes playing a shepherd's pipe as a musician plays an oboe behind him. Then, the woman playing his mother starts to sing. Hall smiles. Television and Hallmark might just be a great fit after all. Merry Christmas, indeed.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. On our last episode, the Lifetime Channel saw the success that the Hallmark Channel was having with Countdown to Christmas, its annual block of Christmas programming. Every November and December, Hallmark airs an increasing number of original movies. Lifetime wanted in on the action. They started their own block of holiday programming called It's a Wonderful Lifetime. Both channels saw significant gains in viewers during the last 2 months of the year. Try as it might, though, Lifetime never could catch up to Hallmark. And both channels see increased competition when streaming giant Netflix starts producing its own low-budget Christmas movies. In this episode, we go back in time to the early 2000s and trace how a greeting card company became a media empire and established the winning formula for Christmas movies so many others now try to copy. This is Episode 2, Once Upon a Christmas Ratings Hit. It's April 2006, Los Angeles, California. Donald Hall Jr. swivels in his chair impatiently in the boardroom at Crown Media Headquarters. He's the co-chairman of the company's board.
All in favor of distributing minutes solely by email and eliminating paper copies, say aye.
Aye.
Hall looks at the agenda, anxious for when they're going to get to the meat of today's meeting, voting on whether or not to sell the Hallmark Channel. Thankfully, that item's next. The grandson of Hallmark founder J.C. Hall, Donald is also the CEO of Hallmark Cards, as well as co-chair of the Crown Board. He flew in from Kansas City the night before for this meeting. Hallmark owns 67% of Crown, making it the majority owner. So he has a particularly vested interest in whether or not they sell the channel. 2 years after the premiere of A Mall and the Night Visitors, Hallmark Television Playhouse rebranded as Hallmark Hall of Fame. They primarily aired adaptations of American and European classics like Inherit the Wind and Hamlet. But in the 1970s, they started airing original works as well. Hallmark Hall of Fame Productions is the longest-running anthology program in television history and has won over 100 awards. Then, in 1998, Hallmark bought a significant stake in Odyssey Network. They transformed Odyssey from a religious channel to a family one. And in 2001, they rebranded it as the Hallmark Channel. Unfortunately, it hasn't performed as well as expected, and last year it lost over $200 million. The secretary of the board checks the time.
We're due for a 15-minute break at this point.
Hall groans. Look, I'm fine with delaying our break. I think the question on everyone's mind is whether or not we're going to sell the Hallmark Channel. I move that we address that issue first, then we go on our break. Another board member leans forward.
I second.
The secretary nods.
All in favor of delaying the break?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Mr. Chairman, the floor is yours.
Hall's co-chair stands up, buttoning his suit coat.
Well, as you all know, last July we started looking for buyers for the Hallmark Channel. Now, an offer has come in, but it is a bit lower than we were anticipating. Lower than the $11 per share that we're currently trading at.
I don't like that.
A man with a graying beard raises his hand.
Hey, I thought we were confident that someone like Disney or News Corp would snatch us up, that the Hallmark Channel could round out their existing array of channels. What happened with that?
Hall interjects.
Who knows? People are short-sighted. Our critics think we're worth less because we're an independent media company. We don't have sister networks to cross-promote, so we can't demand high affiliate fees from the cable carriers. I guess they ignore the fact that we reach 73 million households and our ratings are consistently in the top 10. You know, I don't think it makes sense to sell for that money, and we don't have to. Thanks to the tax-sharing agreement we worked out, Hallmark Cards can keep writing off the channel's losses. So I say we hold out. I think we can get better offers.
The man with the gray beard shakes his head.
I think there's a bigger problem we need to address.
We have almost exactly as much debt as we do assets. Obviously, most of that debt is a loan from Hallmark Cards, so Crown isn't going to go bankrupt. But I think we're seeing it's not an attractive proposition to potential buyers. I agree we should wait for a better offer, but I think we should take it off the block for the time being. Let's make some cuts, get that debt down before we put the company up for sale.
Me too.
Hall looks to the secretary.
All right, let's put it to a vote.
All in favor of taking the Hallmark Channel off the market?
Aye.
The ayes have it.
In the wake of pulling the company from sale, Crown Media's stock price tumbles all the way to $3 per share. Maybe they made a mistake not accepting the offer. It's Monday, December 4th, 2006, Crown Media Headquarters, Los Angeles. An executive assistant stands in front of a fax machine waiting for the weekend Nielsen ratings to come in. One of her daily duties is to bring the ratings in the industry trade magazines to Paul Fitzpatrick, the company's chief operating officer and acting CEO. The assistant lets out a loud yawn. She's exhausted, but she doesn't want another cup of coffee. She's jittery enough already. In fact, she's been on edge for months since Crown Media tried to sell the Hallmark Channel. In an effort to cut costs, they've laid off 20% of the staff. Several of her friends have been let go. And every day, she wonders if she's next. Their CEO left, and a permanent replacement is yet to be named. Everyone knows that November and December are the channel's best months, ratings-wise. But given everything that's happened this year, the assistant is expecting the worst. The assistant removes the pages from the machine and scans the numbers out of habit. It's helpful to know what kind of mood the executives will be in, and the ratings are a good indicator.
No way!
She can't believe what she's seeing. She hustles to Fitzpatrick's office, her heart racing.
Come in.
The assistant walks into Fitzpatrick's office, holding out the trade magazines and the ratings. Fitzpatrick is focused on his computer monitor.
You can just put those down on the coffee table. I'll take a look at them later.
I think you'll want to look at the ratings sooner than that.
Fitzpatrick looks up, his curiosity piqued.
Oh, yeah?
The assistant hands him the facts. Fitzpatrick reads the numbers, then looks up. The assistant nods.
Yep, the Christmas card was the number one cable broadcast Saturday.
Not just that, it was our highest-rated movie of all time. Christmas movies always do well for us, but this is a whole nother level.
The Christmas card follows a soldier serving in Afghanistan who receives a touching Christmas card from an anonymous woman. Once his tour of duty is complete, he travels to the small California town the card was sent from to track down the sender.
A few more like this, and we might turn this channel around.
I should answer that.
As the assistant hurries back to her desk to answer the phone, she feels hopeful for the first time in months. A little over 2 years later, with a new CEO at the helm, the Hallmark Channel figures out how to truly capitalize on its Christmas success. It's summer 2009. Newly named CEO Bill Abbott shuts the door to the conference room. He's about to kick off a meeting with his top executives. Abbott was promoted to CEO after running national advertising sales. He's already made big moves, including signing a deal with Martha Stewart. Today, he has a new proposition. It's a gamble.
It's no secret that Christmas is our strongest season. In the past, we brought in upwards of 17 million new viewers during November and December. Obviously, we're doing something right. But I think we can do better.
A few executives exchange looks. One of them cautiously leans forward.
What do you have in mind?
When in doubt, go bigger, right? Well, our viewers want Christmas. Let's give them Christmas. I want wall-to-wall programming. I want to be the channel they put on when they're baking cookies and wrapping presents. I want to be their go-to place for Christmas cheer.
A younger executive with purple glasses clears his throat.
We should make sure we integrate our Facebook and Twitter feeds. They should also be completely on brand with Christmas content.
Abbott nods.
Absolutely.
Another executive with short blonde hair shifts in his seat. Abbott notices.
Jeff, you don't look convinced. Is there an issue you'd like to raise?
Well, I'm just wondering about saturation. As you said, people are tuning in Saturday nights for new movies. It's an event. Do you think we'll dilute that appeal and hurt our ratings if we program hundreds of hours of programming?
Abbott shrugs.
It's a good question, and one I don't have the answer to. But I think this is worth taking a swing at.
Abbott's gamble pays off. By the weekend before Christmas, Hallmark has had its highest-rated week ever and is the number one cable channel for its key demographic of women ages 25 to 54. The press dubs it the premier holiday destination. And in 2014, Hallmark decides to place its riskiest bet yet.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind.
She's a big city doctor who thought she had her whole life mapped out.
There's a fellowship in Boston. He said I'm a shoo-in. Do you think he's
It's fall, 2014. Crown Media CEO Bill Abbott and Executive Vice President of Programming Michelle Vickery are watching a trailer for a Christmas movie set to debut in the upcoming season. It's one of 12 they're premiering this countdown to Christmas. Members of the marketing team join them. It's for a film called Christmas Under Wraps, which stars Candace Cameron Bure, who starred on the sitcom Full House as a child. She plays an ambitious doctor who loses out on a prestigious fellowship, then takes a job in Garland, Alaska. At first, she's skeptical of her new off-the-beaten-path home, but by the end of the movie, she realizes the small town has everything she needs.
This is the best Christmas I've ever had.
Vickery takes notes. But her mind is elsewhere. She's been distracted from the first second of the trailer when the production company's logo came up. Hallmark doesn't have its own in-house production team. They partner with several production companies to make their movies. But Vickery wonders if they should be taking a cue from their own movie. Maybe it's time they look at where they are. The twist of the film is that Garland is home to Santa's workshop, and the man Bure's character falls in love with is Santa's son. Santa doesn't outsource his work. Maybe Hallmark shouldn't either. But before she can contemplate this further, the trailer's over.
Christmas Under Wraps.
The lights pop on. The head of marketing moves to the front of the room.
Thoughts?
I think we're in good shape. I just have a few thoughts. At the 58-second mark, let's hold the shot of the northern lights just a touch longer. At 1 minute 16 mark, the music's coming in too loud. Let's pare that back. But yeah, you know what we like and our style. Nice work.
She turns to Abbott. He nods.
I agree with Michelle. This is great work. I think we need to hold on the mini hammer a touch longer. Otherwise, the joke gets lost.
The marketing director writes down their notes and nods.
Great. We'll get right on this.
Vickery and Abbott exit the screening room. Vickery bites her lip and decides to go for it.
What would you think about starting our own production arm instead of working with outside companies? We'd have even more direct control over the creative process, and we would control all the rights. We wouldn't have to split DVD sales, worldwide rights, etc. It feels like the next natural evolution for our company.
Abbott nods.
It would take a decent amount of capital to get started, but you're right that there are some strong benefits.
No one knows our brand better than we do. We know the core elements our movies have to embody. Emotional connections, traditions, and celebrating the season. It makes sense for us to oversee the entire process, soup to nuts.
You know, I agree with you, and we're finally at a place where I think we have the means to make that a possibility, which is saying something considering where we were 8 years ago. I'll tell you what, I'll talk to the board about it.
The next year, they launch Crown Media Productions, which will oversee the production of 6 of their movies, with a plan to bring more in-house. But as Hallmark invests even more money into its Christmas productions, another player is ready to make its mark. It's December 11th, 2017. Screenwriter Karen Shaler is walking down the street in New York. She feels her phone buzzing and reluctantly checks who's calling. It's been blowing up all day with well-meaning texts and phone calls. It's a little overwhelming, but she's also expecting a call from her agent, so she can't ignore it entirely. It's her friend from back home. Shaler knows if she doesn't answer, her friend will just keep calling until she does.
Oh my God, Karen, are you okay?
I'm fine.
Even with that tweet?
Yesterday, Netflix sent out a snarky tweet that read, "To the 53 people who've watched A Christmas Prince every day for the past 18 days, who hurt you?" Shaler wrote the movie A Christmas Prince, though she had little to do with it after Netflix bought it. But the tweet kicked off a social media firestorm. Some people were upset by what they saw as Netflix's invasion of privacy by tracking individuals' viewing habits. But others used it to express disbelief that anyone would watch the movie once, let alone 18 times. They berated it for its plot holes and general cheesiness. But Shaler's not concerned.
You ever hear the phrase, "There's no such thing as bad publicity"? As far as I'm concerned, that one tweet probably quadrupled the number of people who had even heard of my movie. Now it's not just another movie on Netflix. It's the movie everyone's talking about. I mean, seriously, do you hear people talking about any other movie right now? I don't. Ha! Not one Hallmark movie, not one Lifetime movie has gotten this kind of attention. I think it's kind of cool.
That's true. Besides, I loved it. I felt like I was whisked away on a magical ride for 90 minutes.
Yes! That's the entire point. If people want to make fun of it and turn it into a drinking game, that's fine with me. Hey, whatever makes them happy.
Shaler's phone buzzes. Another call's coming in.
Oh, that's my agent. I gotta go.
She switches over her call.
Hey, yeah. Do you have an update?
Shaler is right. A Christmas Prince and Netflix controversial tweet about it dominate the zeitgeist, overshadowing both Hallmark and Lifetime's slate of movies. There's officially a new Santa Claus in town. On the next episode, Hallmark is under attack on all sides. Lifetime makes its move to overtake Hallmark by broadening the diversity of the leads of its movies, and Netflix uses its deep pockets to its advantage.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is episode 2 of Christmas Movie Wars for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Austin Rackless wrote this story. Voice acting by Michelle Phillippe. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez. For Wondery.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect forever.